40, greetings and happy Friday to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up!
Well, on Wednesday's show, we talked about the rumors. On Thursday, we talked about whether or not it would actually happen. Well, today is indeed Friday, and after a tumultuous week, it's finally confirmed. Neymar has left Barcelona for Paris Saint-Germain. That news finally confirmed late yesterday with the payment of the massive 222 million euro transfer fee, a world record. And at a press conference Friday in the French capital, the team officially introduced Neymar, who said that while he leaves behind friends and good memories in Barcelona, his heart told him it was time to sign with Paris Saint-Germain. Neymar could begin his PSG career as early as this Saturday, when the team takes on the French club Amiens SC. Turning now to tennis and an update on the City Open, our hometown tennis tournament here in Washington, D.C. It was a long night of tennis on Thursday night, so long, in fact, that it stretched into Friday morning. A series of rain delays pushed back the evening matches, which did not finish until nearly 2 o'clock in the morning, and I would know because I was there with our producer, Bill Werkinger, when world number 9 Kei Nishikori of Japan took out world number 32, three-time City Open champion Juan Martín del Potro in straight sets. But just prior to that match was one of the biggest upsets of the tournament so far, and a big win for one of Africa's bright tennis stars. South African Kevin Anderson, number 45 in the world, took out the tournament's top seed, world number 7 Dominic Thiem of Austria, 6-3, 6-7, 7-6. That thrilling back-and-forth match stretched on for nearly 3 hours, not counting the two-hour rain delay just after the match began. On the women's side, world number 2 Simona Halep of Romania, the tournament's top-seeded woman, came back from a slow start to beat Colombian Mariana Duque Marino by a score of 3-6, 6-4, 6-2. Both women taking medical timeouts due to the heat, with the on-court temperatures reaching as high as 64 degrees Celsius. After that match, Halep addressed the brutal conditions.
I was a little bit dead on court, as you saw it. It was really hot down there, and I felt a little bit sick after the second set, but I knew that it's the same thing for her, so I just wanted to stay there and to keep fighting.
Halep will play again today, facing off against world number 56, Ekaterina Makarova of Russia.
G'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively sunny man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoje here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sonny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
It's a big day today in the world of athletics as the IAAF World Championships kick off in London. On yesterday's show, we had part one of Sonny's conversation with Parker Pick Up the Pace Morse on what to expect from African athletes at the championships this year. In part two of that interview, Sonny and Parker talk about the other athletes to watch out for this upcoming week and some big absences, notably the Russian athletes who have been banned from participating due to doping violations. But Parker begins with a look at some accomplished Americans and what they might be able to achieve.
Well, that, again, is going to be an interesting bunch. There's been a lot of turnover inside the American team in the last couple of years, most notably the absence of Ashton Eaton in the decathlon since he's newly retired. A couple of interesting ones to look out for is the 1500 Olympic medalists, Jenny Simpson in the women's 1500 and the men's gold medalist, Matt Centrowitz. Both going to be some really exciting faces to watch. Simpson is actually a former world champion herself from 2011 in Daegu, and there was some comment after the fact that she had had the slowest winning time in world championships for years up to that date. I actually asked Simpson about that, and her response was, if somebody else wanted to run faster, why weren't they there? And you could make the same comment about Centro's Olympic run last year. It was not a fast race. But again, if the race wasn't that fast, why couldn't somebody else run faster? So he's smart. He's got good tactical instincts. He knows where to put himself in the race. He knows how to time his moves to use the strength he has in the best way possible. He could easily be outlegged by somebody with the talent of an Asbel Kiprop, but Kiprop has not shown the same kind of tactical savvy that Centrowitz has, so that kind of a race can be really interesting. Another face I'd like to see, and I don't know how well she's going to turn up, Shamir Little is running in the 400-meter hurdles. She's been a world junior champion. She ran in Beijing the year after she was world junior champion. She was NCAA champion that same year in 2015. She won NCAAs, she won USAs, and then she made the world final. She's a professional now. She hasn't made quite as much of a splash as she made in 2015. It'll be interesting to see if she's back on top again.
Another name, Christian Taylor in the triple jump. I think he must be considered a gold medal favorite.
Yes. I would love to see a great and Christian Taylor is one of the nicest guys that you could ever talk to. He actually ran the 4x400 at the inaugural World Relays in 2014. He ran the 4x4 a couple of times that year, he said, just for the experience, and also because when he was an undergraduate in Florida running collegiately, he used to run the relays to help score team points, even though his strength is in the triple jump. And he's had fantastic years when he's run the relays. He's really smart about getting outside his comfort zone, and there's always been some hope that somebody, particularly the Cuban Pablo Picardo, could come out and give him a challenge, but sometimes, you know, he shows up, and when he's at the top of his game, it's really hard for anybody else to get up there. And there's been talk for a couple years now that he is in range of Jonathan Edwards' world record, which is 22 years old now. I mean, that record is old enough to drink.
Parker, one of the crowd favorites in London will certainly be Mo Farah, the reigning Olympic champion for Britain at both 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters. This will be kind of his swan song from the track. Mo has said he's planning to concentrate on the marathon distance. Your thoughts on Mo Farah?
Well, this is a tricky one. And when you're a track star like Farah has been, when you've been a successful 5,000, 10,000 runner, it's really tricky to figure out when you want to make your transition to the marathon. And it's become even trickier in recent years as more and more young athletes have been skipping that track career entirely and going straight to the marathon. But the roads are where the money is. So if he's going to capitalize on that kind of dominant form that he's had on the track, he really needs to make that transition before he loses all of his talent. I shouldn't say talent. He's not going to lose his talent. But before he loses the conditioning and the power that he has as a younger athlete. On the other side, though, a lot of what's made Farah a dominant track athlete has been his ability to just run away from everybody in the last lap of a long race. That's not going to be as helpful to him on the roads. It's going to be a lot harder for him to sprint away, to even know where the last lap necessarily is. And he's not going to be able to use that in that sort of devastating psychological strike that he's been able to use on the track. So he may find that even if he transitioned at his best, that the road is a different animal. It's going to be a different world for him. So we might be seeing the last great races from Mo Farah. You can come back and throw that at me when he runs a world record. and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to bury any athlete prematurely, but his success on the road is by no means assured.
Parker, this will also be the last world championship for the Jamaican sprint sensation, Usain Bolt. How will Bolt's retirement after London 2017 affect the sport?
I don't think it's possible to underestimate how much of an effect Bolt has had. If somebody knows one athlete, if they only know one track athlete, they know Bolt. His face is the most recognizable of any other Olympic athlete on the track. And it seems odd to me. I think that he turned up maybe halfway through my time watching the sport closely. I remember watching his first world record in New York in 2008 and then being taken by surprise by it, by the idea that this kid that I imagined as this like gangly teenager was suddenly able to coordinate his legs so well that he put it all together at this sort of freakish talent that could run that fast over that short a distance. And the idea that now he might be gone, it's like when you throw a big rock in a pond. For a second, it just clears all the water away from it. And now we're going to see the water come slapping back in. But the interesting thing, I think, in London is that there are these young kids now. There are these Andre Degrasse and the Trayvon Brummels of the world. You got to know that Andre Degrasse has got his fans, too, who are not necessarily going to want him to sit and watch while Bolt collects another set of medals. Degrasse can give him a run for his money, especially at 200 meters. And the two of them are, I think, the best kind of rivalry in that they're going to run to beat each other. They're going to run to win. But they also have this sort of understanding. There's a famous picture of them in Rio last year just laughing with each other as they cross the line at the 200-meter semifinals. And it's going to be pretty wild to see how that plays out. What happens when Degrasse is in a position to strike, especially at the 200 meters, if he will be in a position to strike, nobody really knows what kind of shape Bolt's in.
Parker, we mentioned Sebastian Coe earlier, the IAAF president. In advance of the London Championships, he said that he could not guarantee that athletes would not test positive for performance-enhancing drugs in London. Do you think the drug story will be part of London?
I think it has to be, even if the story is we haven't had any tests yet. I don't think that there's going to be a big high-profile bust there. Recently, all of the stories that we've heard about doping have been these retrospective stories, these waves of positive tests that are coming out of the last batch of retests from Beijing 9 years ago. I think that if there's somebody who is not clean at London, I think we're not going to hear about it for a couple of years because they're freezing samples, they're retesting them constantly, and it might be a couple of years before the tests pick up on what people might be using. But the other side of that, too, is that it's impossible for a clean athlete to prove they're clean. The only thing that you can claim is that you've never failed a test. So even a clean athlete is unable to prove that. It's kind of the sadness of doping in the sport is that we can't trust even the athletes who we really should. And so I think that Coe is right in saying that he can't guarantee that there won't be positive tests because he can't. It's impossible to guarantee that anybody is clean, even the ones who really are. A lot of the time, it's on the athletes. They're the ones who know. They know for sure whether they're running clean or not. And I think at the end of the day, it's a matter of the athletes being able to live with themselves.
Finally, Parker, are there any other storylines from London that our Voice of America listeners should watch for?
Well, there are lots of them, but I think this is connected to your doping question. We should expect the medal tables to be dramatically different from Beijing. And the reason is more or less total absence of the Russian team. The Russian suspension, the ARAF, the Association of Russian Athletic Federations, the ARAF ban from the IAAF, their suspension from competition, has really changed the competitive landscape in a lot of events. You'll see it in the women's middle distances. You'll see it in the locks, particularly in the locks. You'll see it in the throws, in the horizontal jumps, especially for women. You know, again, there's a very good chance that there are clean athletes who have been denied the opportunity to compete by this ban. In fact, it's almost certain. But there's also been an opportunity, a door opened for athletes who've had to stand behind the dirty athletes for years. And in that way, the Russian suspension has sort of opened the door for some new faces that we maybe haven't thought of, maybe we haven't heard from before, to pop up and win a medal that they might not have won when they were in the shadow of the Russians.
My thanks to our very own Sonny Young and Parker Pick Up the Pace Morse. And just a reminder to our listeners, the IAAF World Championships begin today in London and run through Sunday, August 13th. I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Are you ready to get your 55-minute fix of Pan-African music and music news? Well, good. I've got a playlist of infectious current songs from Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Uganda, Mali, and Nigeria. Also, a few classics tossed in that promise to make you smile. And wait till you hear a sample of Boko Bakata. That album just dropped. And I've got an exclusive interview with the artist from London just for you. So tune in, peeps, and feast your ears Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC.
Friends, we can all listen to The Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America.
You want to listen to the latest African music? Just tune in to the African Beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays at exactly 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
African Beat. We love it.
I feel good.
But right now, you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports with Sonny Young. So check it out.
Joining me now in the studio is my VOA colleague, Doug Bernard, who's here to talk about the latest trends in the sports world. Sporty greetings and very happy Friday, Doug.
Very happy Friday to you. And, you know, I miss me some MC Hammer.
Who doesn't love Hammer, right?
Oh, my goodness. Well, so you were just talking about, and we were hearing about, the IAAF, which kicks off today in London.
Yeah, and big competition there.
Big competition, big names. Of course, Usain Bolt, this is his last, you know, sort of professional run, as it were. A lot of talk about that. And lots of talk on social media. Interestingly, on Twitter, for example, there's both at London 27, which is a group that's basically affiliated with the IAAF, and there's also hashtag London 2017. Two different kind of channels, as it were. The at London 2017, great stuff. Lots of athlete profiles, lots of people talking about what they're looking forward to, behind the scenes footage, all that kind of thing. And you can also get, if you use this hashtag, hashtag be the next. And they're offering a couple of these. I don't know what you call them. Emojis? Twitter-ogies?
Twitter emojis, I guess we can say.
Twitter emojis.
Something like that. Icons.
One of them is a little tiny Usain Bolt doing his famous, I call it the sort of the bow and arrow thing that he does after.
It's a good description of it. I like
it. Yeah, it's sort of, you know, he's got one arm out, one arm back. Finger pointed in the air. And also, there's one for Mo Farah as well. His actually has a name. Maybe Usain Bolt's does too. But you can get these if you want them. He calls it the Mobot. He kind of puts his hands on his head, you know, after a victory or whatnot. So you can pick those up. A lot of people sharing those around. All of this is at either at London 2017 or hashtag London 2017, more of kind of a discussion going on over there. Also, let me just point out a story that really kind of blew up on social media involving Conor McGregor. You may have heard about this or not. So, of course, Conor McGregor is getting ready for the big fight later in August with Floyd Mayweather. He is a MMA fighter. McGregor, he has never boxed professionally. So they brought in Paulie Magnani, who is a two-time champion, world champ, in two weight classes, actually, to be a sparring partner, to really kind of, you know,
practice, to have someone who actually has won titles.
Exactly, and kind of really put McGregor through his paces because, you know, it's two very different types of fighting. Well, Magnani has quit now. And because McGregor and his team started Instagramming and tweeting out pictures of McGregor, like, really kind of taking it to Magnani. One photo where it looks like he was, you know, kind of falling down. McGregor knocked him out or whatnot. And Magnani has he fought back on Twitter and on Instagram. He says, you know, I'm this is a fiasco. It's a circus. This is not what I signed up for. Basically, what he's saying is McGregor is making him look bad.
Saying that the photos are staged, maybe?
The photos are staged, or what Magnani wants is, he says, you know, release the whole sparring. We sparred for maybe about 13 minutes. Release the whole tape of that, and you'll see that I gave a pretty good beatdown to McGregor. So, you know, yet again, I mean, just kind of big egos coming together. We're going to see more of this build up, I'm quite sure.
Oh, absolutely.
At this point, we don't know who McGregor may bring on to be a sparring partner, or if he's maybe just difficult to work with. I don't know. Anyway, so lots of people talking about that and on Twitter. And you can see a lot of that if you want to just, again, use this hashtag, McGregor Mayweather, or Mayweather McGregor, depending, either one. And lots of people talking about that today out there as well.
Yeah, and that's actually very curious timing, because there were rumors a couple weeks ago that McGregor actually got knocked out during one of the practices.
So, oh, really?
Very interesting stuff behind the scenes. We'll see how it all plays out. Thank you very much, Doug Bernard. That wraps up our August 4th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Kwame Ofori. Thanks to VOA engineer Sidrak Franklin. And thank all of you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington. We'll see you back here on Monday when Sonny returns from vacation and takes his seat back in Studio 22. But for now, that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. Homemade bombs, known as improvised explosive devices, or IEDs, are used by terrorists not only to attack opposition military forces, but also, increasingly, to harm civilian populations. As a world leader in clearing explosive hazards that threaten civilians, the United States is taking action to tackle these deadly devices in Iraq, Syria, Colombia, Afghanistan, and elsewhere around the world. According to the Landmine Monitor, an annual report by a non-governmental organization, person-activated IEDs and improvised landmines caused 1,075 casualties in 2014 and 1,331 casualties in 2015. IEDs are a particular threat to both military personnel and civilians as they enter areas previously occupied by terrorists. For example, during the final months of the battle for Mosul, ISIS sowed the city streets with IEDs to prevent civilians from leaving. Later, as they retreated from the city, the terrorists set thousands of IEDs around critical infrastructure like power and water utilities, schools, and hospitals. Non-state armed groups such as ISIS and the Taliban often use IEDs to destabilize peace operations and terrorize civilian populations in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, writes Stephanie Pico, a public diplomacy officer at the U.S. Department of State. ISIS also has deliberately placed IEDs before retreating from an area with the intent of prolonging insecurity, inflicting additional casualties on communities struggling to recover, and delaying economic redevelopment in liberated communities long after direct ISIS-instigated hostilities in those areas cease. The United States is the world leader in conventional weapons destruction, including humanitarian demining, having invested over $2.8 billion in projects in more than 100 countries since 1993. In addition to humanitarian demining, the United States' counter-IED efforts work to disrupt networks that use IEDs and train the forces fighting those networks to identify IEDs and protect against them. Counter-IED differs from humanitarian demining in that it focuses on deterring, detecting, and preventing IED employment before threats become imminent, writes Stephanie Pico. Working with our allies in the international community, she writes, the United States will continue to develop strategies to address the IED threat to prevent IED users from carrying out their nefarious plans and achieve peace and security.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Are you ready to get your 55-minute fix of Pan-African music and music news? Well, good. I've got a playlist of infectious current songs from Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Uganda, Mali, and Nigeria. Also, a few classics tossed in that promise to make you smile. And wait till you hear a sample of Boko Bakata. That album just dropped. And I've got an exclusive interview with the artist from London just for you. So tune in, peeps, and feast your ears Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
More than 600,000 people died from malaria last year. Most of those were children. But you can help protect your family with some simple steps. Mosquitoes transmit malaria. Therefore, try to avoid being bitten. Empty all containers of standing water. Water jugs, bottles, cans, and containers that livestock drink from can be breeding grounds for thousands of mosquitoes. Clean your roof of any rubbish where water can collect. Empty any ditches or holes of standing water. Avoid going out when mosquitoes feed, at dusk, overnight, and early in the morning. Sleep under insecticide-treated bed nets.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.